and welcome to A Cast of Ice and Fire, the official Game of Thrones podcast of MovieMingler.com. I'm Nick of the House Stark, and I'm joined by Tate Flower, formerly of the House Tyrell, but now in hiding because the Mad Queen Cersei is killing all Tyrells.
Probably. Well, maybe I'm a hidden Targaryen.
Maybe you should bend the knee and see if she gives you back Highgarden.
Maybe I have royal blood. Maybe I'm part of the Targaryen bloodline. Who knows? What we do know is that we just finished watching Season 8, Episode 3, The Long Night.
Yep, which was the highly anticipated Battle of Winterfell, which, actually, looking at Game of Thrones facts on Twitter, this is very interesting. This episode took 55 days to film. And remember, it's television, for God's sake.
So that's...
It took 55 days to film, 750 people on set, like in the biggest moments, so obviously for the big wide shots of the armies and stuff. Longest Game of Thrones episode ever, 82 minutes with all the credits.
Yep.
Longest battle sequence in film or TV history, which is longer now than Lord of the Rings, Battle of Helm's Deep in...
Return of the King.
Two Towers.
Helm's Two Towers. Deep. Oh, yeah. Obviously.
And it was directed by Miguel Sapochnik, obviously, who directed Hard Home and Battle of the Bastards. And he's coming back to direct, or he already has directed, technically, episode 5 of this season. So we can assume there'll be a little bit more...
Another battles war episode.
Of some sort of. Though I doubt it'll be as long as this one because they kept on hyping this up as like the big boy of the season. But then again, as we saw from the trailers, and now that we've seen the first three episodes of this season, we haven't seen anything beyond this episode now.
No, we haven't.
Apart from the preview at the end of this episode, but like in the big trailers, we don't know what is going to happen for the rest of the season.
We don't know where to next. So the trailers only hinted the first three episodes.
Pretty much.
And now that we've seen it. You know, Arya running through Winterfell, the furthest the trailers ever showed us.
Pretty much. I mean, unless there was an image of Cersei drinking wine and looking, and that was in the throne room maybe, so that might be something from later.
But it could have even been from episode one.
And deleted or something.
Yeah.
So,
because she's drinking wine in episode one.
Cersei's drinking wine in every episode. So she should be your favourite. You should bend the knee, because Tate is a big wine drinker.
Well, maybe I should just convert to a Lannister.
So anyway, let's talk about the episode. Before we go any further, I just want to say that, of course, this is going to be spoilers. We're not going to skirt around any issues. So if you haven't seen the episode, then turn off, because we're going to spoil from the beginning. And there is some big spoilers in this episode.
That there is.
Before we go deep, and like normally, you know, this show, we go play by play. I've said this nearly every episode this season on the podcast, because this season's so different. But normally on this show, we go to like... I say what's happening at Winterfell, and then we talk about Winterfell. And then I say what's happening at King's Landing, and we talk about King's Landing. And then I say what's happening in Dorne, and we talk about Dorne. But this episode was all at Winterfell again. Lots of crap happened, but everything was at Winterfell, all pushing along to the same conclusion. I have an order for what we can talk about, but in general, it's going to be just, you know, a free-for-all. But I'll try to keep a little bit of an order. We'll try to talk about the episode in order, and we'll leave the big... Well, spoilers now. We'll leave the big Night King death... For the last thing we talk about, Arya and all that, which the reason why I want to leave it for the last thing is because I'm sure we're going to talk about that for a long time.
Yeah.
So we'll leave it to last. There's plenty of other stuff to talk about anyway. Lots of good moments. But before we start from the beginning and talk about the show, you know, play by play in a way, you tell me, what did you think of the episode?
I enjoyed it to some aspects. I enjoyed it to some aspects, but I reckon this would be my least favourite of the season so far. I really like the first two episodes. I think, like, even Benioff and Weiss said, did you watch After the Show stuff?
Yeah, I watched
it. They say the thing with battles is that they can get boring. And if you play them out too long and you're not focused on characters, you just feel like it's going nowhere. You're just watching the screen.
Well, that's what I was saying before. I said that before.
And I sort of felt that in the first... Like, I loved the start of the episode. I think the slow build and the tense, and I love the score. Like, the first thing I thought was, like, even the characters, I was just listening to the score, and it sort of reminded me of Batman again, James Bond, Skyfall. They're using that.
Yeah, that build up. Yeah, like the Dark Knight sort of.
The Dark Knight sort of has created that
like Hans Zimmer score. Dunkirk as well.
Yeah.
Actually, a lot like Dunkirk when you think about
the timer and then the sort of that buzz sound.
Yeah, it's like a heartbeat. They're coming closer. Yeah.
I like that. And then I sort of liked when Oh, no, we'll talk about that later. But
you're basically saying a very similar thing to me because I basically said that I...
Yeah.
I wrote a sentence to read out. Overall, it's a good episode with some spectacular moments, some disappointing aspects that could be series-defining, not episode-defining, series-defining, which has a better second half than the first half. Because once we get into Winterfell and we start focusing on the characters that we love more closely and it's lit better.
Yeah.
So dark.
Well, that was the problem.
I enjoyed the second half more than first, where you were leading, basically.
And watching Jon on a Dragon is nowhere
near as fun as watching with the sun. Fighting sword.
With a sword on the ground fighting, because that's the Jon I know and love.
He's Aragorn, yeah.
Let Daenerys get up on her dragon and do her dragon thing. I want to see Jon on the ground with Ghost. We see Ghost. He's not utilising the episode. Oh, too much focus I've on got the freaking dragons.
I've got stuff on Ghost. Oh, when we get deeper. It's very...
You're right. I liked it. Once this sort of got past the opening 40 minutes I say focused on the last 39 from the
minute,
minutes...
From the minute that Arya starts fighting onwards, it's
cool.
It's better.
I think...
But I like the first half
Arya
as well.
Starts fighting. For me, it's when Clegane's hiding behind the wall, scared of fire, scared of death.
Oh, that's around the same time.
Which is just around the same time. Moments before Arya starts.
Yeah, because then Arya falls down, like she does her fight, and then she falls down the roof, and that makes him fight again. And he says, "Look at her; she's not giving up." Yeah,
and then obviously they end up together in a room and have a discussion, and then Arya goes off after she's told something.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Like I overall like this episode, I do, but I have problems with it. But it's very raw right now, and we have to see how the rest of the show plays out. Mm. And it's very raw. Because it plays against expectations. A lot of things that I did not expect to happen now and the way they happened in this episode. So
yeah, I'm a bit the same.
We just got to let it digest. It's very hard to talk about it one hour after watching it, but we're going to do it.
Mm.
But I think that's why I wanted to make a big precursor first. I did enjoy it overall. It's just...
I liked it. But
this aspect.
But I think it's still my least enjoyable episode out of the season thus far.
Well, I think I like the first episode more. Nothing can beat the last 10 minutes of that first episode where, you know, Daenerys talks about burning Sam's dad and brother alive, and then that escalating anticipation for Jon to find out. And then there was all that drama with Dany, and I thought something was about to explode, and nothing did explode, but that was thrilling. Mm. And that was arguably more thrilling than anything in this massive battle. But, I mean, there was still good stuff in it. The one thing I really enjoyed what the show did was how instead of like, we've seen battles against human armies, Battle of the Bastards and stuff, tactics and stuff. I liked how the dead were different. I like how it was basically once they hit the two lines, once the dead hit the front line of our heroes, it wasn't like a normal battle. It was complete and utter chaos. It was caught in a whirlwind, a nightmare. Literally, there's a moment where the Unsullies have got their spears out, and it's complete darkness.
And they're just being forced backwards.
And it's not an army that runs into them. It's literally like a wave of water like coming into them of the dead, like on top of each other. And it was great. I like that.
But I think the lighting is a problem, but I understand why it's lit so dark, because it's the dark night coming, the long night.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's playing to something. Now, I think maybe once we get it on Blu-ray...
Oh, it's all sharpened
up. I reckon it's going to look a lot better.
I think it'll look better on Blu-ray,
And when you can sort of change the picture settings on your TV as well to match it, I think you'll get it looking a lot better, because the blacks were not quite dark and you've got that.
That's because we're
distorted.
Game of Thrones until you've seen on Blu-ray.
Yeah,
Blu-ray
you have to
so
watch
much
it
better.
In 1080 or even higher. Because
but even the 1080 that Foxtel gives you and all that is
not true.
It's not Blu-ray.
You need Blu-ray.
Blu-ray is clearly better.
Or you need 4K, because I think... This episode would look a lot better if it was like sharp. It's just coming off TV.
Okay,
but, you know, I always do that. You watch some episodes, like in the battle. Which was the one in season 4? The wall.
Yeah,
and that's a dark episode too. And that's very.
This one's worse, like dark wise, isn't it?
Like in the opening half an hour when they're coming through, the wildlings are breaking through the wall. It's not sharp, but then you then I got the Blu-ray, and it looks absolutely perfect. I think this is going to be the same thing as well.
I know there's two reasons why it's dark. It's for, like you said, because it's basically people looking into this blackness.
The abyss.
And the abyss, and then monsters coming out of it.
And this big mist just taking over with the dark. And
obviously
when the Dothraki run in
with the lights. With the flame. And then they disappear. That's what it means. Like they go into a darkness that you can't see. So that's why, yes. But I also know that it was too dark in parts.
Mm.
And I know they want to have a sense of chaos, like you couldn't see what was going on, and that's part of what they wanted. But I also think it's technically so they can hide the fact that the visual effects... I mean, let's face it. It's a great-looking TV show, but it's a TV show.
Yeah.
So I think they make it so dark sometimes so they can, you know, they can get away with stuff visual effects wise that you know, in a movie they wouldn't have this, like, because you see Battle of Helm's Deep in Lord of the Rings Two Towers and that's at night time, but you never have a problem at seeing anything because it's lit differently, it's lit better. But I think it's lit better because one's a movie and one's a TV show, and 50 million episode, that's great, yay, but it's still a TV show. So that was kind of frustrating that you couldn't see exactly what was going on, but like I said, it's kind of what they wanted, but it didn't make the most entertaining battle ever.
No.
But once they spill over to the wars, you know, everything's lit up by flames and stuff, and you're like, yep, I can see everything. I had no problem seeing stuff near the end. But before we get into the war part, like, like then that second half of the episode, let's talk about what did you think about the tactics of the battle? Like the Dothraki, first of all. Like, I did, like
the Dothraki running in.
Did that annoy the shit out of you as well? Like the utter stupidity of that as a tactic? Like it was stupid. Whose plan was that?
Who knows?
Well, we know whose it was. It was like John and Danny and all that, but like, I sat there going, that is, you don't just run into the darkness like that. Like, come on.
Let the darkness come to you, maybe.
Wait for it to be daytime. Let them come to you and have traps ready. Don't send out 1,000 Dothraki riders to die and become their army. The image of them running with the flaming swords and then dying out and then the noise coming back after, like the, you know, one horse coming and one Dothraki guy, that's great. Mm-hmm. But then you have to turn your brain off, though, because the utter stupidity of that moment, like leading up, like that was just stupid. Like, what a, it was just like, we don't want to shoot this Dothraki army. Let's get rid of that army really quickly. And when that was happening, I wasn't in the moment. I was just thinking,
I think that might have just been a build-up so Danny would get pissed at John and go off. Well, I think that's...
No, that's what it was. Maybe
You know, poor writing.
That made her, like, break their plan. Their plan was to get the Night King exposed so they can kill the Night King with Dragonfire, hopefully. But that plan was fucked up because the Dothraki disappeared in the darkness and she, it's her people, so she wanted to go rescue them. But, like, holy shit, whose idea is it for them to run there anyway? Like, it was just stupid. So when I was watching it, I was thinking, like, even though it was well shot in parts, I was thinking, wow, so they've killed all the Dothraki? So, like, two seasons ago when she did that amazing thing to burn them all and get all the cows, that's it? Is that what it was building for? Okay. It was silly. It looked good, but it was stupid.
10 minutes and done.
I'm sure there's some available still. I'm sure there's, you know, some horses ran back. I'm sure there'll be, like, 1,000 of them left somewhere. But overall, it was just, it was a very silly tactic for when you're fighting the dead, like, let them expose themselves. I know they're the dead and they can just wait. Well, then again, why are they meeting him in open call? Because they're drawing out the Night King. I'm answering my own question.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like it was the greatest plan ever. So I wanted to mention that. Okay, now Ghost is part of this vanguard. So when Ghost shows up, I'm like, yay, Ghost!
Finally, Ghost is here.
Because he was in the last episode in the background.
Where's John?
Overall, I like the show. And this is a raw emotion thing. But I have to have a rant for a second. The fact that their inability to understand why the fans love Ghost so much, John and Ghost should be like intertwined. They should be together in this battle. Like, they, at least for a little bit. Like, doesn't he have a moment where he pats him and hugs him and says good luck? And then Ghost runs off and we never see him again. Okay.
Yeah.
Calm down.
Why doesn't, you know, John's running through the grounds of Winterfell fighting off the undead.
I thought Ghost was going to come back and save him.
Come on.
Like when he was getting surrounded later on, which I want to talk about later on, because we'll get there later. I thought Ghost was going to save him or something.
Why not? Why not throw it in?
Why not throw it in? Because he gets out of there miraculously anyway. Why not?
Yeah, he gets out of there miraculously.
You could have Ghost saving him at least. I can't believe that Ghost just disappeared. Now, if Ghost comes back at the end of the season, I apologize because this is raw and new. But right now, the fact that we didn't see him in season 6 after episode 3, we didn't see him at all season 7, I feel like we might not see him again. Surely we will, but we might not. So, but right now as it stands, their inability, these people, they live with these characters for so long. How do they not understand Ghost and John's connection? It's the first thing that George R. Martin wrote when he wrote Game of Thrones. It's like the first time you see the family when they find the direwolves.
And they give him the albino run to the litter hand it to John because John's like the outcast of the Stark family.
If this is the, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I don't want to be like a fanboy that complains about everything. That's why I said, I'm just calming down. But I don't know, Ghost, it just seems wrong. So I was very annoyed by the Ghost not coming back again. But maybe some people say shut up. But okay, I don't want to be an annoying fanboy.
There's still 3 more episodes for Ghost to come.
But the fact that John didn't even pat him last episode. Like, what? Do they, what? But we see the dragons fall. And I like the dragons too. I like the dragons. And I don't want them to die. I'm actually more on edge about them dying than any character in the show. Every time the dragons get hurt in this episode, I was like so scared they were going to die. I don't want the dragons to die because of the stupidity of humans again. So just like, so it's not that I don't like the dragons, but come on. The direwolves in the first four seasons really were like, they were never as big as they should be because I think they were expensive and stuff, yeah. But they were more integral to the Starks, but then now they've just killed them off and they're just, ghosts have disappeared. It's just, whatever. No more ranting. I don't want to be one of those people.
Have faith. There's another battle coming in episode 5.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised that Ghost didn't even come back. It makes you more think like they made the season, didn't even think about Ghost, and they put him in the background both times.
Too focused on dragons.
John never even said the word Ghost in 3 years.
As Russell has said, the problem with the show, too many dragons.
Russell, friend of the podcast.
Russell, friend of the podcast, believes the show's got too many dragons. Maybe he's right.
No.
Too focused on the dragons. The
dragons are important, but I need some dialogue.
Ghost is important to John.
It should be. It should be more important than John.
Like it was in season one.
They should be standing in battles. They should be standing next to each other.
Like with Rob.
Yeah, it's crap.
His direwolf was with him in battles.
The next thing I want to mention on my notes, you actually mentioned before the podcast started, so I know you got stuff to say here. I wrote shaky cam dragon fight above the clouds. Well, you know that wide shot. You know they go above the clouds, and you know how he brings winter, the fog. They go above that and you get these beautiful wide shots, beautiful visual effects that are breathtakingly good.
Yeah.
But then for some reason, and they can afford to do this because we've seen the effects are there. For some reason, the director decided that he wanted to have like that handheld cam where you can't really see what's going on. And like, you know, because we were in the middle of the chaos, like Saving Private Ryan with these dragons. And I'm like, it got frustrating because I didn't know what was going on. Yeah. I had to rewatch and then I could see. But the first time I was like, is that dragon burning that dragon? Like, what the hell is going on? The Miguel Sapochnik needed to like watch J.J. Abrams directing The Force Awakens, watch Peter Jackson directing The Lord of the Rings, and use a wide sweeping cam shot. You can do the the handheld shot works in some aspects, and they've done it on the show before, but overall, the reason why you don't see that sort of grittiness that often in sort of fantasy epics is because you didn't have handheld cameras in the 10th century or in medieval times. Just put the camera back like a painting and let us see the battle. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, the sweeping shots in the escape from Jakku in The Force Awakens. It's still like, it feels like it's trying to capture this moving object, but it does it in such a wide scale that you can see it.
The IMAX.
It was a missed opportunity to see dragons fighting better. Like, it was cool. Like, when I rewatched, I could see what was going on, but the first time I'm watching it, plus it's really dark, you're like, I understand chaos with the zombie fight, but chaos with the dragons, should have been more majestic. And that was
gripe.
Semi-gripe, because it was okay. It just... missed opportunity of better visuals.
I thought it was too much focus on the dragons during the battle, and it didn't feel right. I wanted John off the dragon. As soon as John landed on the ground and wielded a sword, I went, fucking finally, because I was getting bored. I was over it,
Nick.
You're getting bored of this fight?
Yeah.
Because I didn't get bored. I got frustrated because I couldn't see some things and some silly tactics. I'm talking very nitpicky now, but overall, I really enjoyed watching this. And I certainly, even though I have some stuff to talk about, I certainly enjoyed 40 minutes onwards, like a lot.
Oh, me too. I think after all that happened, and once we're inside the walls of Winterfell, the episode became a lot better. A lot cleaner. And a lot more character-focused, not so battle-focused. Not my characters.
But I did like some of the... Like, I love the moment of the wave of dead.
I like the
wave of dead.
Like,
I love those moments.
I like when Melisandre comes up and lights the Dothraki and the whole thing.
That's great.
And just and I love because that looks good.
I love the image of the Dothraki riding out. And I love the image of them disappearing. It's like a nightmare. It's great. Except it's stupid when you think about it. Unless someone can sit down and say, no, that's a good tactic for this reason. Which I'm open to.
Tell us why.
But I don't think it is a good tactic. I think it's just like...
I think it's
killing Dothraki.
So Danny will go off and...
Like, I understand, like, the horses break, I'm not a tactician, but I've seen enough fantasy movies, Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings, you know, the horses can break, like, a line, they can run through, but, like, you're running into complete, utter darkness, so it's just stupid. Like, how about firing those things earlier? They go, you know how they fire those big things?
Yeah.
And they light the army up a little bit? How about firing them first so you can see where they're running into? I don't know. It was silly, but it looked cool. And I'll get over it, whatever, I don't care. I understand why they did it, to get rid of them, and it appears to look cool. And you can't nitpick forever, or you're never going to like these sort of shows and movies. So I've done nitpicking that. I'm done.
Okay,
it's silly, but whatever. We talked about the Dothraki tactics. Another one that kind of baffled me tactic that I should just talk about while we're on the subject. Did you feel that when they broke, you know how they lit up that line of fire, which was a really cool moment when Melisandre did it? I love that.
In the trench.
Yeah, that trench. Yep. I love that. But let's face it. That's never going to keep the dead out forever because they're dead. So they can either wait there or use their bodies to put it out like they did, or they can wait there all night.
Yeah, but the Night King controls them. So the Night King had a plan. Why wait?
So I'm okay with that. I'm just saying that part was fine. I just can't believe that they assumed that would be enough. Like, were you kind of annoyed? Were you waiting for the moment, like in the episode 9 of season 4 on the war battle, when they started climbing up the walls, the wildlings, they had plans for what to do when the wildlings came up the walls, throw things down. I couldn't believe that there wasn't like tar and fire to throw down. Like, I couldn't believe there was no traps. They literally just climbed up the wall and they had nothing but swords. Like, I thought, are you kidding? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Like, how about not sending an army out there to become the army of the dead? They know this. John is dumb sometimes. That's the thing. Instead of sending an army out to die, how about setting them up at the wall with like traps? Like things to throw down there. Just putting people in the open field is stupidity because you know that when they die, they're going to rise again. So wouldn't it be smarter to have just... You're going to lose no matter what unless you kill the Night King anyway, but wouldn't it be smarter maybe to just not send people out in open battle there and to just have a string of massive traps throughout all of the grounds? Fire traps. Were you thinking that when they were going up the wall?
Why did they send the army? Because John's plan all along was to expose the Night King. So he would have been happy to wait.
So he was trying to start a fight so the Night King would come. So I understand that. It's just not the smartest move, I don't think. But it worked. Well, no, John didn't get there, though. And Dragonfire didn't work. But I don't know. I just felt that was annoying. Like, I was waiting for the traps to happen and they didn't have any traps. So I just thought, overall, you guys are lucky that Arya was there with the Deus Ex Machina stab of the Night King. Because if there was a Phantom Menace at the end, destroy one, destroy them all, you'd be fucked. Like, it was really silly. I couldn't believe they didn't have any traps at the wall. What were you doing? Maybe less hanging out and more planning?
Arya doing a little bit of the old Snoke phone room style thing.
They should have had more traps. Because sending an army out there is pointless.
Yeah.
Nearly.
Why didn't they?
You got to burn them because that's not pointless. You burn them, they can't get up again. You hit them with dragon glass, they don't get up again. But burning them, you had to burn them. You had to come up with more ways to burn them.
Well, they had the dragons burning.
I know. And that was good.
But then all the...
I don't know, I'm just surprised that...
They were being burned, they took so many of the living with them.
I'm surprised there wasn't one moment...
The Night King came back, he brought back the dead.
Yeah, I'm just surprised that there wasn't a moment when they climbed up the wall that someone threw, like, tar or whatever it's called out there and then lit it on fire.
Hey, some of Cersei's wildfire would have gone nicely.
Yeah.
But she's got some of that stuck in Westeros.
Yeah, to blow up King's Landing forever. King's Landing is dead. Landing is gone. It won't be there episode 6. Well, I guess while we're here... Because Ed has already died. So I thought before we go into the second half of the episode, because the second half of the episode is like Sansa, Tyrion, and Arya. So we'll talk about them later.
Yeah.
Jon and Danny and all that. We can talk about all that later. I thought now, let's talk about the major deaths.
Okay.
And you can tell me what you think about all of them. I want to say this. My disappointment with these deaths is I'm not crazy like some people. Everyone wanted everyone to die. And I kept on saying leading up to this episode, I don't want Brienne to die. Like, just because she had a happy episode last week doesn't mean everyone has to die. I like happy endings, or it's just going to be bitter to rewatch. It's people can have happy endings. But my problem with all the deaths except Ed's, the Game of Thrones just turned into, and it turned into this last year, and it's continued. Let's say this. Everybody always says, every episode you turn on Game of Thrones, you don't know who's going to die. It's so thrilling. Okay. Once it was. But let me ask you, when was the last time it truly killed someone in a shocking way? In like a random episode that wasn't a battle. Like truly shocking way that you didn't expect it. Like Littlefinger, we all expected him to get his throat
slit. Shireen's death.
Probably. Yeah, probably. Yeah, that was 2 years ago. That was
season 5.
That was a lot of... Yeah, it was. Yeah, end of season 5. Because I...
Now it's just expected that people will die.
The people that do die now, except for Ed, and this is where my problem's going to come, semi-problem, is that they all die heroically, and I love that. It satisfies me as a person. Like, Theon's death satisfies me. Jorah's death satisfies me. Lady Mormont's death. Everyone gets hero death, and this show used to be mean and violent, and it used to just kill Ned Stark out of nowhere. Everyone in the world doesn't agree with me, and you can tell me if you agree, but when Lady Mormont was getting picked up by that giant, and I like her. She's great. Yeah. I love her. She's amazing. But I wanted the giant to bite her head off and the blood to go everywhere.
Well, that's what I was expecting. I didn't think she was going to bite the head off. I thought he was just going
to
crush her.
Well, me too. But I was thinking, I was like, oh my God, wouldn't it be cool if you ripped her head off and the blood went everywhere? Because the show used to be mean. Beginning of season 2, Joffrey sends out people to stab babies in their mother's arms. Take them out of mother's arms. Now, it's not saying, and I'm not saying, I want everything to happen bad and evil and I hate it. And it's not me saying I hate Lady Mormont. But that's the sort of death that the show doesn't give us anymore. Everyone's deaf except Ed's.
Yep.
Jorahs, Theons, and Lady Mormont were all heroic. Oh, and Dordarians, yeah. Heroic. But that one makes sense. We'll talk about that later. All those deaths were heroic. And it's like, we need to have some deaths where someone just turns around and their head falls off. I mean, that's what it should have been. That's what Game of Thrones used to be. You don't have to kill half the characters. Like, I don't want Brienne and all that. But some people should die shockingly and violently and cruelly. Like, cruelly. Not all the time, or it's mean-spirited. But that's what made us watch the show. That was the thrill of the show, is that, fuck, the Red Wedding happened.
Yeah.
The Red Wedding, this show now, this Up episode, this episode now is so far from the theme and the feeling of the Red Wedding. It's a different show. And I still like it, but I'm just saying, there's too much heroic deaths. And there's too many hero shields. Brienne, and I don't want these people to die. I like them. But Brienne, Jaime, Podrick, and Sam are surrounded by 400,000 billion dead people, and not one of them died. Not one of them. Now, I don't say I want them to die. I just said I don't want everyone to die. But then don't put the characters in that situation. There is no way Sam should survive what happened to him. He's surrounded by 400 dead, and he can't even fight. Like, it was reminding me of the worst aspects of Lord of the Rings, and I love Lord of the Rings. So that's how you can tell me that I love Game of Thrones too. I'm just nitpicking like hell.
Yeah.
Because I love Lord of the Rings to death. I think they're the best movies of this century. Hands down, that trilogy. The worst aspect of that trilogy starts with the Two Towers onwards, and it's the Battle of Helm's Deep, and it's the fact that Aragorn, Gimli, and Legolas are so overpowered that they can be... Like, there's a moment in Two Towers, if you remember, where they pick up Gimli and they throw him over.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's like 500,000 orcs around him. And he just... And then you get this big 3D CG shot where he's just... This one little midget guy is knocking 500 of these guys off. And you're like, it was too much? Like, the Fellowship of the Ring had like danger. The fights were more grounded and there was danger in that final fight. You know, when Aragorn takes on the I can't remember all the names now, but the end fight in that movie, there's danger and dirtiness in that fight. But Two Towers onwards, Aragorn and all that became superheroes. You just couldn't touch Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli. And I love the show, the movies to death, but that was always a problem. And that's what Game of Thrones has turned into now. Because we have that again later on. When Jon is surrounded by 500 dead, there is no way he should survive that. And I'm not saying I want Jon to die, because I don't want Jon to die. Because if Jon dies now, anticlimactic for what you've built up. But John should never be in a situation where he's surrounded by 100,000. Like, he's surrounded by all these dead people. There's no way he should get out of there alive. And it got frustrating. The show is not the show it used to be. It protects too many people. It puts too many people in Hollywood situations.
I think I need to feel more emotion for Jorah's death. And I didn't.
Well, I didn't cry.
Neither did I. And Theon as well.
Why? I got emotional in Theon.
Emotional, but I didn't cry in either.
Is it because you're comparing it to how amazingly Avengers Endgame made you cry like hell for Tony goddamn Stark?
Or for Captain America?
I felt so much more emotion in that movie than in this episode, I say. And I love these characters so much more than Tony Stark and Captain America.
Well, that's right. Growing up with Theon. Growing up with Jorah. In the majority of the episodes, so...
Well, I got you. Well, I wrote in my notes for Jorah, great hero's death.
It is a great hero's death.
It's exactly what he would have wished for, but...
Milk it.
This is the weird thing, because as an audience member, I'm satisfied with Jorah and Theon's death, and Dondarrion's as well, we'll talk about that. I'm satisfied with those deaths. But maybe I shouldn't be satisfied. Isn't that what the show used to be? Where it used to be dark and cruel? So I'm not saying I would want to change it, because I'm happy that Jorah dies the way he dies. And like I said last week, he was the one that was number one on my list of had to die.
Mm.
Because without Jorah, Dany's got no one to rein her back. And I really did enjoy watching Daenerys stab zombies. Like, I really enjoyed that. That was great, watching Emilia Clarke do that. I was just imagining behind the scenes of her just going crazy. Because if anyone who knows a little bit about Emilia Clarke, she's just the most joyful person in the world. She's like the opposite of Daddy.
She rains sunshine, doesn't she?
She's the joy. She giggles. I could just imagine her behind the scenes just loving the fact that she gets to stab things. But anyway, I probably didn't feel as much as emotions as I should for Jorah, I guess. But I did. I felt very satisfied for him. It felt like that's what needed to happen.
It did.
So I'm okay with it, kind of. But like, I'm also not okay with it for the same reason I just said. But I'm okay with it overall. I wouldn't want Jorah to go out in a shocking moment where his head just gets chopped off.
I thought maybe just milk the moment a little bit.
You don't think there was enough milking? She did cry over him, and then the dragon came down and sat with her. Yeah, I liked it personally. But I do agree that it did make me cry, you know, I guess.
Maybe because we did expect it. That it's not as emotional.
I thought it was also beautiful. Like, it was a perfect death for him.
It is.
So it's less emotional because it's exactly what he would want. Like, because he loves her. And she loves him too, but he died protecting her. Like, dying like that is his dream. It was fulfilling. I love their friendship. I actually really love Danny and Jorah's friendship. So maybe I should have cried more. Maybe
I think it is kind of sad that he can't get like his last word out before he dies.
Yeah.
Does he want to say something then he's dead?
I love you. So we got Ed's death as well. When Ed died the way he died, I screamed out, "Fuck!" And I was really angry. Sam. I was actually really angry, but I wasn't angry. But that's how the show should make me feel, I'm saying. Yeah. But I like Ed so much, so for him to die like that is disappointing. But not disappointing in a bad way, disappointing in a... You know what I mean? That's what the show should make me feel in a battle.
Yeah.
But I really was disappointed that Ed died because I really like Ed. But like disappointed in a good way, like I keep on saying. And I thought I was preparing now for carnage. But it didn't. Oh, it didn't happen like that. So it was okay.
Didn't happen in the way that we thought it was going to happen. Once they're inside the wall.
Yeah, I thought it might have been way worse because I thought they were going to lose the battle. Let's face it. I think we all predicted that because we thought surely they wouldn't kill the Night King straight away. But we'll talk about that in a minute. Lady Mormont's death. We already talked about it.
We have.
So I guess I already talked about it. Like I love her as a character, but I wanted that moment to be crueler. I really did. Like I know that some people might be shocked. How could you want that? But that's what the show was.
Maybe the show's just listened to too many PC reviewers.
Well, no, but it's just it's too much fan servicing sometimes. Like sometimes the show used to be so cruel. There's a balance, but I'm okay with it. Whatever. Now, Theon, what did you think of Theon's death, Tate? You already said it was kind of underwhelming. Did you think? Did you really think that?
It's not emotional, but I understand. I think, you know, he made the ultimate sacrifice.
Protecting Bran.
The
person he meant to have killed for years.
But well, that's right. And I think once death comes to him in the form of the Night King, is that there's two ways you can look at death. Is you can either run from it or head onto it face to face. And I think he was ready for death.
Oh, yeah.
I think, you know.
He went back knowing he was going
to
die there.
He knew that as soon as he went to tackle the Night King, he was going to die. As soon as he started to charge him.
Oh, yeah, it was heroic.
There was no way that I think inside of his head...
That makes the death even better, though.
I think inside of his head, he knew that no matter what he did, he was dead.
But
there was no chance that he was going to win at all. That is heroic. Protecting Bran.
Oh, best moment of the episode for me. For me, personally. Mm-hmm. Theon... And it wasn't the Theon death as much, though that was part of it. It was the moment where Bran... Seriously, talk about me getting emotional and stuff. When Bran said Theon, and he goes, "You're a good man,"
mm-hmm.
and the minute he said a good man, you knew he was dead. But I went, "Oh!" I shook. I got emotional, and he said, "Thank you." And then even earlier, he said, "You know, you're home. You've come home." And I'm like, "Oh my god, Theon, hands up, let's clap. The greatest character arc ever in the show, maybe. Like, what a character. Some people hate him, some people don't." What an amazing character arc he had. He's got one of my favorite moments ever in season 4. And I always, like, when I've said it before in this pod, plenty of times probably, but when he doesn't know Ramsay's Ramsay yet and he escapes.
Yeah.
And then he thinks he's going to go see his sister, Yara. And just, you know, they're trying to break back in, but he doesn't know they're breaking back into, you know, where Ramsay, you know, the Bolton's place. So he's free. And he has that moment where he breaks down in season 4 and he says, "Ned was my father. And I betrayed him, and I did," and he says all these things. That New Winterfell was my home, and he breaks down. It's so emotional, and I love him. I think he's had such an amazing character arc. And that moment where Bran says him, "You're a good man." Well, what an amazing ending! Like, just what a great ending for that character, and just heroic. I really got emotional when, you know, he's home. That's his true family.
Yeah,
I loved it. That was my favorite moment. We haven't talked about my second best moment. Have we talked about my third best moment? I can't even remember. No, we haven't. That's my favourite moment of the episode.
Your favourite moment of the episode?
Was the moment he said, "You're a good man." The moment. If you want to talk about that specific moment, "You're a good man," I felt the chills rise. It was just beautiful. That's all Theon needed to hear. And he deserved it. He did a lot of bad things, but he's made up for it. He's gone through a lot.
I think he's paid a lot of...
It was great.
Of body parts.
So I really loved that. Though, you know, leaves it open for maybe Tyrion to get with Sansa now and not Theon. I've got my next part here, which is Sansa and Tyrion overall, which is my third favorite part of the whole episode. So I've skipped number two. We'll get to it. We'll get to number two soon. But Sansa and Tyrion, I just loved them. I said pre-season. I don't know if I ever said it on this podcast or not. I think I might have mentioned that I think I'm wrong now on episode one's review, Winterfell, where I said, but before the show started, I said, I think Sansa and Tyrion have a chance of actually ending up together if Tyrion doesn't die by Dany burning him, because that was another prediction I had. And after watching this episode, if Tyrion survives, and I think Sansa's definitely surviving, well, I think there's a mighty chance now that Sansa and Tyrion end up together. That moment where she says that you were the best of all of them, I thought, oh,
come on.
Damn it, heartstrings. That was a good moment. That moment they share, when they're hiding, when the crypts have come alive and he kisses her hand, like, oh my God. Like, just, they belong together. And I think it's such a beautiful character arc. It has to happen now in my head. Unless you want to do some shocking moment, kill someone or whatever. But if they end up alive at the end, that has to happen. Just the character moment, it's just, you know, here's Sansa, who was a spoiled little brat who wanted to be a queen. Now she's far beyond that. But she had all these dreams about marrying the beautiful Prince of Flowers, who was gay. But, like, you know, she has this image of, like, you know, I want King Joffrey, the Prince of Flowers, all this sort of stuff like that. And then she sees Tyrion, he's this imp. He's like, he's imp. And in the books, it's worse. Like, he's uglier. Like, Tyrion's, because, like, Peter Dinklage might be short, but he's a pretty good looking bloke. But in the books, Tyrion's more of a monster. Like, he looks like more of a monster, not is a monster.
And he's lost his nose in the books as well.
So Sansa is sort of like, this is like the ultimate character arc where she realizes that the greatest man, she's married to all these assholes, basically. The greatest man she ever married was the opposite of what she would imagine when she was growing up. Like, he's the greatest man she's known, in a way. And I think that's so great. I want it to happen. I loved everything with Sansa and Tyrion.
They have a good relationship.
Sansa's great. Tyrion's great.
Don't know how that's going to work with Dany. That triangle.
Oh, they mentioned that drama there. What did you think of Missandei's reaction to, well, you know, all these people? You know, you're all talking so negative about Dany, you'd be dead if it wasn't for Dany. What did you think about that when it happened?
She's clouded. Yeah.
So you think that she's, yeah, because it's true in a way. Or it's definitely true
but
in a way.
That's all she knows.
It's true in
she
a way.
She doesn't really know anyone else besides Dany. She sees Dany as this savior.
Well, everyone before Dany and Grey Worm and all that, she was just a slave.
Yeah, that's right. Dany freed her. But how free is she really? But I think she's so, you know, so clouded by Dany that she hasn't seen what Dany, the bad side, what Dany can inevitably be.
I think she's right, and she's right, but she doesn't understand the North's plight. Like, the North, we've already talked about it last week, but, you know, the North, you know, Targaryens don't, and the North don't mix. She's a foreign invader. They've already named a king. They wanted to be independent. They want to be independent for years, really. But so she doesn't understand that aspect, but she is right as well. Like, if it wasn't for Dany and the dragons and her army, it would be worse.
Mm.
No question. So, yeah.
But who rallied who?
I just thought it was an interesting moment.
But who rallied who? John rallied Dany.
Yeah.
Missandei says, oh, we'd already be dead.
It's true.
Without
it's more complicated than good and evil. That's what we said about. That's the great thing about this show.
But fighting that war, I think, you know, Dany has joined Jon to fight the war north of the.
Well, after she saw it, she knew that she had to do it. Yeah. But she's not going to have a kingdom if they didn't fight the Night King here. And you got to fight him early because it just gets worse and worse. The more Yami gets, though, you just stab him and they will die.
Game over, man. Game over.
Because he sired them all. So I guess. Anything else about Sansa and Tyrion? I just really liked it. But I'm going to go off.
I do like Sansa and Tyrion together. Hey, their relationship can grow. I thought one of them might have killed themselves in the crypt.
That's what it seemed like to me. When she pulled out that blade and he kissed her hand, I thought, are they going to slit each other's throat or something? Or someone's going to slit someone's throat? But I don't think that's what they wanted us to think. Because the next shot, nearly, Tyrion's like leading Sansa around, like sneaking around. So I think it's more like she pulls out the blade to fight if she has to fight. But I think something got lost in translation there. And the only reason I say that is because
she wanted to fight, but inevitably if they got found,
they would have died.
They would have killed themselves.
But I think that's proof that the director might have had a little bit of lost in translation there, because if we both came to the wrong conclusion, but I think that's clearly the wrong conclusion. They wanted us to think that they're getting ready to sneak out. So, but anyway, yeah, it's okay, whatever. When I rewatch, I'm not going to think that. I didn't want him to die. I thought if she stabs Tyrion and slits her own throat, you know, if all of a sudden it gets, you know, they kill each other and then it's just all... everything's fine 10 seconds later, I would have been pissed. So I'm happy that didn't happen. That's not the way Tyrion goes out.
No.
So that would have been just annoying.
Tyrion goes out drinking and banging whores. Well, Tyrion doesn't go out at all.
Well, it's the only thing. See, my dream of Tyrion is that Tyrion ends up getting what he always wanted, which is that, like, a winery. Remember how he said he just wants a vineyard?
He wants to
sell. And he wants to grow old?
What is it? Where's the gods of tits and wine?
But remember, he always talks about how he wants to die 80 years old with a, you know, mouth around my cock, all that. That's his cliched line. But there's this, in like season 4 or something, he said that he just wants to get away. He says it one episode.
He wants to get out of it. And he goes.
And he talks about how he wants a vineyard.
The drowned god wants to drown people.
Yeah, but that's a different episode as well.
God. I think he just wants to go. I think he just wants to go down south.
You know, but I think
and escape it all.
Well, he wants to go to this. He wants to go. I reckon
he wants Vito Corleone moment and have his heart attack in the vineyard.
Well, that's the thing. I want Tyrion. See, I don't. I'm not obsessed with death like everyone else. I want dramatic. Like I said, I want dramatic moments that shock me.
Yeah,
but I don't need every character to die. Like everyone else on the internet needs everyone to die.
Why can't Tyrion? But there's people
complaining.
There's people
complaining that the body count's not enough this episode. And like, are you fucking kidding? Like six people died. Like main characters.
The body count is enough because
it's just the way they died. It could be more shocking, maybe less.
Well,
heroic.
How do you shock people when you have a battle and then you just stack up a body count? It's more. It's better if you just stack up one significant body.
Yeah, like
and it, make it shocking.
I don't go with that. Like, yeah. I didn't want Brienne to die this week. I thought there was a possibility, but I didn't think it needed to happen.
I think she will die.
Maybe not now. But the way that the situation, they were on the front lines and she fought on the front lines for the whole time. She should have died. But that's the show's fault for making him, turning him into Gimli, Aragorn and Legolas all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But that's another story. But so I'm not obsessed with the death. My perfect ending would be Tyrion on a vineyard. Because he mentioned it. I don't know what season. Like season four, he mentions it. It's only once he mentions it. And he mentions how he wants to just go away from Westeros and just be on a vineyard, like have his own winery and just drink all day. I think it might have been season five, the beginning of it. But the problem is I want Sansa and Tyrion to end up together, and Sansa's north. She owns the north. That's her baby. And unless they just leave Westeros, I don't think they're going to leave. So that means his chance of, if he marries her, his chance of living in a vineyard is gone because you're in, I don't think wine goes very well in the north.
Ice wine.
I don't think, does grapes go really well in the north? Probably not.
Ice wine. Ice freezing.
So I don't know. We'll see how that goes.
Need some sunshine though.
Well, normally, you know, if you remember the first season, it's not as snowy as this normally, but it's still always cold. If you read the books, Catelyn talks about, you know, she's married Ned for 20 years or something.
And can't get used to the
she
cold.
She can't get used to the cold, just goes inside her all the time. It hits her. Like, you just never get used to it, even though she's lived in the North for 20 years. But her kids are used to it, because the ones born there, like the North and kids. But she's always felt like a little bit of an outsider. It's a really great passage in the book, which he talks about how the cold just seeps into you.
They sort of loosely touch on it in season one, but you can't capture it like you can in a book.
I know,
you can't describe it.
You can't. So I guess we can move on to the second half now. The second half, it's much better because you can see what's going on much easier because of the lighting and stuff. And I thought basically the show improved drastically from the moment I wrote here that Arya fights for the first time, because you can actually see her moves. And it was so cool to see Arya really do the cool move. Like, she looked cool doing it.
She can dance.
It looked like the actress was actually doing it. It looked like Maisie was actually doing it. And maybe she wasn't with stunts, but she looked good.
I think she probably was.
She looked good. It looked really good, too.
She was doing the water dance.
She was believable.
In season four.
She was believable doing it, too, where sometimes when she was younger, and this is hard because she was a young girl, but when she was younger and they were trying to make her look like she can kind of do some stealthy stuff, she didn't kind of look like it. But it looked like she really went to the gym and worked out her moves this season. She looked good when she was fighting.
She spent time with the choreographer.
She looked good. So I really enjoyed that fight. My second favorite thing, scene and moment of the episode was Arya. So now I've done my top three, but this is my second, was Arya sneaking around the library. Just an incredibly well-directed sequence. Like, just so good. The camera following her, she sneaks from row to row. There's a dead walker. You know, there's a white walking down this aisle, down this aisle. She goes under the table. She comes back because someone's coming that way now. Yeah. Like, it was just, I love horror movies. Just a brilliant sequence. So well directed. So well put together.
It felt like Metal Gear Solid.
Nice and quiet. Yeah. Except with the dead. Yeah, I loved it. It was so well directed. So if we're done with that, we're up to the big one.
The Night King.
The revelation that Arya was the person that kills the Night King.
The prince that's promised?
Maybe. Because it doesn't follow the prophecy much. I got positives and negatives with this. But I've only got negatives because I haven't had enough time. They're only negatives because I haven't seen how it plays out. The rest of the show. So it's not really a negative. I've got positives and I've got questions. First of all, good positives about this. The fact that Arya killed the Night King has justified her plotline. Full stop now. We've always needed her to do something. We've said it so many times on this podcast. I have at least, but everyone else has said it probably too, from my memory. Arya, you know, goes to the House of Black and White for two seasons. She feels so disconnected, but then she doesn't become a faceless man anyway, but she has their skills. But we kept on saying she has to do something. She has to do something big. Or it's going to be like, why did we follow her for all those years in plot lines that are like really separated? I'm talking about season five onwards, like season five and six. But now the fact that she did this, that's it. Justified. You've justified why she did it. Her plot line is completely 100% justified now. So great. The other thing I kept on saying throughout the years is that Beric Dondarrion, he came back to life six times. You have to have a reason why you come back six times. Last year, Beyond the War episode, he says, I've come back six times because of this mission, maybe. And it kind of implied that it might be this mission, Beyond the War mission, which was utterly stupid if that was the case. And I was very annoyed 2 years ago during that review. I said, if this is the case, if this is why he came back, then holy shit, surely not. And I was right, surely not. Because the fact that he died protecting Arya, tick, massive tick. Like, great, you've justified that storyline forever. So that's two big ticks. The minute that Dondarrion saved Arya, I know we already had Melisandre staring at her. So you thought,
What's going on?
That could be misleading though, but you're thinking, ooh. So you're like, is she going to kill the Night King maybe? Maybe not this episode, but is she going to kill the Night King? Is she the Princess Promise? You go, ooh. But when you definitely, well, for me, when I definitely knew, like 100%, I don't care, oh, is Jon going to make it in time? Doesn't matter. 100% I knew it was going to happen when Dondarrion died. Because I thought the minute he died, I thought, well, that's it. He died to protect Arya, not to, you know, Arya has to kill, this is it now. Because the Lord of Light's fighting the Night King.
Mm-hmm.
So when did you know, or was it just a shock? When did you truly know that she was going to kill him? Maybe not this episode, but did you truly suspect it at some stage? Or was it kind of a shock when she did it?
I wasn't shocked.
Like, when did you expect, when did it hit you that, oh, she's going to do it?
Because we know that Melisandre always gives us a hard look at somebody who
I'm
thinking, oh, what's going on with Arya here?
And when Dondarrion died,
you know something about Arya.
Were you thinking, oh, without...
But they've met before in the past. And she goes, you're going to kill many people, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, in blue.
In blue eyes, yeah. And she says that in like season three.
Yeah, I think, season maybe. Three.
Yeah. When they go and they bring him back from the death.
Yeah, and season three, Melisandre comes and picks up Gendry, and takes him back to take the blood off him.
With leeches.
With Stannis.
And Stannis is, the smoke child. So I thought something was going on there.
And what about when Beric died? Did it hit you, or were you thinking about it?
When Beric died, I wasn't really thinking about it as much.
In the back of my head, that's always been a big plot line. Like, he has to die, he has to do something, or I'm going to be annoyed.
But it wasn't so much that, it was like, what do we say to the God of Death?
Oh, yeah.
And then they sort of figured it out. Yeah, okay. Arya's going to stare death in the
face. Someone said, I can't remember the exact line, but on a podcast I was listening to, who was saying that Arya could kill the Night King, like, not now, like a week ago they were saying this. Yeah. Someone said a beautiful poetic thing where, I can't remember the exact lines, but when she's in the House of Black and White, and that Valar Morghulis guy,
yeah,
I can't remember any of the names anymore. So
Valar Morghulis, what's his name?
Dohaeris, that guy. You know the guy I'm talking about.
Jaqen
H'ghar. He tells her at one stage in season 5 or 6, mm-hmm. but I don't remember the exact quote, where he's training her, and he tells her how, you know, once the God of Death is promised a life, it needs to have that life. So, you know, in season two, she saves three of them.
Yeah.
Including him. He says, I owe you three deaths because you took three deaths away from God, the death God. So that's always been the clue. Like, you can't just, if you save someone from death, you owe death to a God.
Yeah.
And then someone was saying this, that the Night King is basically resurrecting people and not giving the God a death. Yeah. Dead people. So when Arya actually kills the Night King and all the dead fall, she's literally giving all the dead back to death.
She's giving the dead back to the God of Death.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
Jackson, that's a theme throughout the whole... Yeah.
You can't save people from death. You can't rob death.
Yeah.
The God of Death, basically.
And what she does at the end of this episode is basically give those people back to death. Night King stole these people.
The Night King has robbed all these dead people.
So she gave it back to death.
And basically she's giving back to the God of Death.
And that's beautifully poetic, if that's what they meant on purpose.
Which is Valar Morghulis.
All men must die. Yeah, which is the theme of the show. So she literally lets death have the souls back in a way.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think that's on purpose when they write stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, they said they knew for about 3 years.
Did you watch, they knew that Arya was going to kill them.
Because that's when they passed the books and obviously Martin told them what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But obviously a lot of those dialogues from the House of Black and White is from the book anyway. So all that talk about death is from the book. And I would be shocked if George R. R. Martin doesn't mean all of that when he means it, like thematically means it.
Oh, absolutely.
The show might not deal with it because the show's in fast forward, like they're moving forward, which is okay. They're moving forward now. But
hopefully we get the book that does it better.
But thematically, it's actually beautifully poetic if you think about it like that. Like she literally did. Maybe Jaqen H'ghar. Remember at the end, Jaqen H'ghar smiles when she leaves in season 6.
Stark.
She goes, I am Arya. Yeah. And she runs off and he smiles. Like,
Lady of Winterfell.
And I remember us talking about it, like, wait a minute. Like, why is he smiling if she's not, you know, she's not no one and she's left him? But what if the House of Black and White were training her for this moment. They want her to go back there because they knew that she was going to kill the Night King.
Mm-hmm.
And she was going to give death back to death, like the dead body people back to death. It was like a whole plan. I think you could rewatch Arya's arc now for the whole 8 years, and you'll probably see little clues that she's always going to be the one that kills him.
Yeah,
she's stacking with the pointy end as well.
Sticking with the pointy end.
Another first season reference back too.
You got to think that Valyrian steel dagger is what started this war.
Yeah, Bran. That was what Bran was nearly got stabbed with. Littlefinger's blade
got stabbed with, and then obviously Catelyn Stark pinned it on Tyrion Lannister. And they arrested him, and that led to Jaime attacking Ned Stark in the streets of King's Landing. The dagger, in other words,
yeah, Littlefinger went back, and he got back. Littlefinger got it back, and he held Ned Stark's throat to it.
That's right.
And that dagger, which still makes me wonder if this show—we're going to talk about this later. Does this show have a surprise up its sleeve with Littlefinger and stuff? Like, because why does Littlefinger have that Valyrian steel blade? Maybe we're going crazy. And if this episode proved anything, sometimes you got to calm down and just go for the obvious. because we'll talk about that.
I think that's going to be a shock.
Hopefully.
This is episode 3. I reckon there's something
I'm having in store. I don't think this is going to happen, I'm having these dreams lately. Not dream. I'm having these visions that there's going to be a Red Wedding style moment where all the Starks are in a room and there's a little bit of drama going on, and Dany gets everyone's, she slits all their throats. Like, I just have this dream of her killing everyone. Like, truly shocking us again in a brutal way, because now the prophecies are done. Arya can die. The prophecy's over. If you want to kill her, I don't want him. I'm not saying I want him to die. Once again, I'm saying I have this image of Dany having a bit of drama, and then next week's episode or something ending with like everyone, you're in this room, and then everyone like unsullied come up behind all the Starks and slit all their throats, including Jon's. Melisandre's fucking dead, so she can't bring him back to life. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm not saying that's what I want to happen, but I wouldn't be against it if it happened in a cool way, because that's what the show used to be. And I have this feeling. I'm hoping the show will do that again, but we'll see. You think there's going to be a shock?
I think there has to be. Otherwise, what do you do to show?
Oh, like, it could be the traditional ending, though.
So now,
versus evil.
Well, it's actually like, now going back to the first season title scene, it's actually like Game of Thrones now.
Yeah.
It's not a song of ice and fire.
But you still could be the ice and fire, can still be Jon and Dany, obviously.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, is that it's not so. I think they're leading up that this whole Dany v Cersei thing, where I'm thinking it might be more of a Jon v Dany.
Maybe we're going to see what happens. Like,
but I don't think that's a big shock. There's going to be a surprise. There's going to be a twist in there that's sort of rewatching it. It's all going to make sense. I just don't know what it is.
I have a feeling in my gut. I hope you're right. I hope you're right. But I have this feeling in my gut that we're just going to get the traditional ending, which is fine if it's done well, but we're going to get good versus evil, a little bit of drama, but Dany and Jon are going to get married or something, be best friends. Cersei dies, and we get an epilogue episode. I get this feeling in my gut because, let's face it, for years everyone has all these crazy Night King theories. And it could hold judgment to the fact that it maybe still go on, but I doubt it's going on. I think it's over. Just by watching behind the scenes stuff, it seems like it's over. So, you know, we were like, surely it's more than just killing Bran. Surely that this unborn baby, this, he's a Targaryen, this. Nah, it's just the simplest ending possible we got.
It could be.
So, but,
you know, Baelish.
That could actually happen. That could happen.
Ties to Braavos. He worships the many faced god.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying
he might come back.
The ending of the Night
King's Landing might be in ashes, and then Baelish just comes out from nowhere. Obviously, it'll be done better than being explained that. But he could not be dead.
I'm not against it, because I would like some surprises by the end. But, like, just if this is it for the Night King, this is when we can start going to a little bit maybe negatives, semi-disappointments. It's disappointing.
It is disappointing.
This is a disappointing ending.
Because, you know, the messages, the kid, like, what's all that?
Well, it seems like
we're going to get answers.
People would.
The only thing I can think of is that, obviously, when Bran was warging in that episode, what was he warging? Was he leading the Night King to him? Or was he trying?
Well, he was like a GPS. The Night King was already going there.
But was he reaching out to something else? And we're going to see what he was reaching out to.
I think he was just watching the battle. Because he goes into the crows and they're just watching. They're just watching the Night King fly. I think he was just watching the battle. Maybe not. I think just don't overcomplicate it anymore. I think we're going to get the simplest answers for everything. I really think we're going to get. And I'm fine with it. I'm okay with it in a way. But in the behind the scenes. Oh, first of all, before I get complaining, I don't want to complain too much, because overall I did like it. And we've got to leave it open for possibilities of the future. We don't know the whole story yet. But I want to say this. I really love that Arya killed the Night King using a move that we saw in season 7 when she's fighting Brienne and she drops the blade into her right hand.
Yeah.
If you remember when they're sparring in season 7? So we literally saw that move already. So I really like that. And when the Night King turned around and grabbed her, I thought she was fucking dead. I thought, oh shit. In that moment, I thought, oh my God.
Mm.
I didn't know how she was going to get out of it, but then she stabbed
him. She did the Ray thing.
And then when she killed him, and
it was like Snoke-esque.
When she killed him, I was like, oh,
I wasn't.
Okay.
Well, that's that.
That's.
Am I satisfied?
Oh, well, that's the thing. I don't know. Because.
What's on with that?
I've said so many times that the Night King overall is a good outside antagonist, but he's boring.
But, yeah.
Cersei and Tyrion.
Show any emotion. There's no character. Yeah, he doesn't say anything.
Cersei and Dany and Jon are much more interesting. Their sort of conflict. So I'm happy that Cersei's still around because I wanted that conflict to be there at the end. But I'm very disappointed. I think I am disappointed. Unless something happens, but I doubt it.
Yeah.
Or maybe they knocked the ending out of the park, so I don't care. But I'm disappointed that the White Walkers are dead already. We got 7 years of winter's coming, winter's coming, winter's coming. Then winter was 2 episodes and 1 battle. We didn't even see them in 2 episodes. And that they say in the behind-the-scenes documentary after the episode, inside Game of Thrones, they say, you know, with this episode, we're ending one of the major plot lines of the show. And I went, nah. You're not ending one of the major plot lines of the show. You're ending the major plot line of the show. This feels wrong. This is too early. When your prologue of episode 1 is the White Walkers attacking people from the wall, you're not setting up the penultimate bad guy. You're setting up the ultimate bad guy. Now, I'm not saying that. I imagined that they were going to somehow cleverly write everything to culminate together. Like in episode 5, Jon, Dany, Cersei are all at King's Landing and the Night King. Like everything culminates. No one's working together, but like everything's clashing. In an epic way. I imagine, but them just dying here and then moving on to Cersei seems, anticlimactic after all the build up in a way. It just feels like they're not our plot line. The prologue of the book, they're the antagonist. They're the main muscle. Cersei can be mad and not listen to him, and then things can go terrible because Cersei's going mad and she wants to blow up King's Landing because the Night King's in there. All that shit can happen, but the Night King shouldn't be dead now. It really does feel like kind of an anticlimactic build-up with winter coming. Oh, one battle. He did.
Arya did it.
So that's my semi-complaint. Unless we see the ending and see what else happens. We have to see how it all plays out.
We do.
But I have a feeling...
I'm expecting there to be a shock. Please.
For
the love of the show.
You'd forgive it. If the ending sticks landing so hard, you'd sort of go, well, that was a good ending for them, and then we got to move on to the more interesting stuff. Let's see how it plays out. But right now, after all the build-up, it seems like, really, that's it? Next complaint. Or maybe complaint. Melisandre, in episode 1 of season 2, one of the first episodes, we see Stannis pulling out a sword out of the fire. Melisandre believes that the prince that was promised was Stannis, and she orchestrates the pulling of a blade out of the fire. Now, in the prophecy, the prince that was promised kills the Night King. I didn't see any blade coming out of any fire. So, and then Melisandre just kills herself at the end, so she clearly thinks it's over. Okay. Nissa. The Lightbringer. The sword. Does that prophecy mean nothing to this show? I don't know. That kind of annoys me. Because looking back now, in retro, that's why I said semi. I wrote like, but I really enjoyed the sequence when she killed him. Like, it was really cool and it was dramatic and all that stuff. And I was on tense. But after it happened, I started thinking about it. I'm like, that's not what we heard, what was going to happen for the whole show. That's not the prophecy. Okay. And then we get into one that could be very troubling by the end of the show. I don't want to nitpick too. I'm sorry, people. John was dead and he came back to life because of the Lord of the Light. Well, the Lord of the Lights finished his job. Melisandre killed herself at the end. She thinks this is it. Why the hell did Jon come back to life? What the hell did he do in this episode? He sat on a dragon, yes. So you could technically say, if he didn't sit on that dragon and burn a few people, then the Night King would have got there earlier and killed him. And that's true. You could say that. But that's just convenient and bad writing and like, oh, everyone had to happen the way it happened or Arya would never killed him. And you could say that and you could technically be right. But that's crap. John should have been the one that killed him. I like Arya. That's all I'm saying. It justifies her plotline. But I'm sorry. John came back to life. Like, what is the point? And then you got... And Dany could have done it with him. Dany, in The Prince That Was Promised, you know, born of salt and smoke or whatever, ash, you know, the dragons will be born. There will be a shooting star. That's all part of the prophecy. Danny's that half of the prophecy. John comes back to life. They should have had a part in this. More than, like, riding a dragon and falling off the dragon. Like I said, you could technically get away with it, but I think that's anticlimactic. It's like, yeah, it justifies her storyline, but unless there's a twist to come with the Lord of Light and stuff. But I don't think there is a twist to come because Melisandre went out there and died.
But what if
Melisandre died because her journey was over. Hmm. So I'm sorry. Are you telling me that Jon came back to life because, why not? I'm sorry. That's crap. There's no flaming sword. There's no Nissa Nissa. Jon came back from death. But maybe we're overthinking it. Trying to justify it. But if Arya kills the Night King, the Night King's still alive, then okay, maybe. But Melisandre thinks the Night King, the Lord of the Light stuff is over. So in my opinion, that kind of might mean that the fact that Jon came back to life was just for this battle where he did nothing. I guess he's distracted him for a second. So you technically can get away with that. But isn't that really anticlimactic when Jon's your hero of the show?
It is.
That's a troubling thing. I think that could break the show in the future. Maybe not break it because I love the show to death, but it could just annoy you in the future. Like, why all this stuff is happening to Jon when...
Maybe something big's going to happen to Jon later on.
I guess Jon got Winterfell back. Jon got Winterfell back, and they needed Winterfell to hold up this. So I guess at the end of the day, he wasn't the prince that was promised. I guess it does make sense. It does work. Maybe I don't want to turn into one of those people with expectations that had expectations and then get angry. So I'm thinking about it.
Maybe just wait for the show to end, and then you can think about...
Because at the end of the day, Jon got Winterfell back, didn't he? Jon got Winterfell back, and they needed that for this battle. So, yes, it's technically all good in a way. It just feels like I couldn't have been the only person in this whole world, including the only person on this table, who wanted Jon and the Night King to fight with swords. Weren't we building up for a sword fight that was epic? Didn't you want a flaming sword versus the Night King? I just can't believe they didn't have a sword fight. I don't know. That's it. Didn't you want a sword fight from him? I did. I've been waiting years for their sword fight. I thought it was going to happen outside of Winterfell.
Night King and Jon fight.
Well, that's,
bring it on.
Then Fire Ice. He's got the fire sword because he's the prince that was promised, but not anymore. But it's just... I don't know. That's weird. That's it.
I'd like to get Frank's opinion.
Oh, I think
he's been very quiet tonight.
Have you messaged Frank?
No.
Oh, Frank. Yeah, he's not on the. He's not here now. I'd think Frank would be semi disappointed in some aspects of this episode.
I think he would be too.
And like I said, we just came from it, so we're very raw right now with our reaction. And like I said last week on the podcast, I love franchises that I love, so I love to massage the plot until it fits into my head. So I'm sure I'm going to be fine with this in the future, but right now, my passion is coming through because it's just so raw.
Yeah.
Overall, I like this episode. This was great television when you compare it to most other TV. It was pretty spectacular. It was exciting. It was thrilling. It had some emotional moments. But then it had some moments where you think, does that work? But you just have to sit back, watch the rest of the show and sit back and think about it later. Because I'm sure they thought about this stuff.
They must have.
Well, George R. Martin...
Where's the ultimate payoff?
George R. Martin wrote Arya to kill the Night King. George R. Martin wrote Jon to come back to life. And so, it could be... Let's see how it plays out. We haven't seen the rest of the show.
There's three more episodes. Maybe there's something in store.
But the only thing is that Melisandre going outside to kill herself just makes me feel like, that's Night King, Lord of Light.
Mission accomplished. Let's go.
Dusting hands off. I'm done. Show done. Let's move on. And that's what it feels like. Melisandre's just... And I'm wanted to tell Melisandre, did you see a flaming sword? I don't know, Melisandre, if it's done, but maybe it is done. Technically, if Jon and Danny aren't there, Arya doesn't kill the Night King, Jon doesn't get Winterfell back, Danny doesn't help with the dragons, and Jon doesn't distract the Night King for a bit with the dragon fight. So I guess it's technically all there, but it just seems like, let's face it, Jon's our main character. Not Arya. But if you look at screen time, Jon's our main character. And Danny, I would say, is our co-main, even though she's not... She's our co-lead, even though her screen time is behind Tyrion and all that. But... Let's face it, Ice and Fire, they're our main... So it just feels weird that they're not the ones that put the finishing blow on the Night King. One of them. It feels wrong. And weird. But like I said, it justifies Arya's storyline. Completely. Does. Just so I said, up and down. I don't know how to feel, but we don't know until it's all over. This was funny. I want to read this. Ryan Johnson's tweet. Director of Star Wars The Last Jedi. Now, the only people that would understand this tweet for the trolling that it is Star Wars fans / with another prerequisite, Star Wars fans who live on the internet and follow, all the stuff going online. I'll just read out the tweet first, and if I have to explain it, I'll explain it. Ryan Johnson wrote after this episode, he writes after every episode, but this was trolling. And he's trolling Star Wars people, not anyone else. He's not trolling the show creators. He wrote, "God damn it, I had this whole amazing Night King theory." Mm-mm. That's it. That's all he wrote. Now, you might not get that, but that trolling is basically like, after Last Jedi came out, the internet exploded with angry fanboys when Snoke died all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And Snoke dies, and everyone's like, "Oh my God, I had all these Snoke theories, and Rian Johnson just pissed on my childhood." You know, all these angry people. And it went on and on and on and on about all the, and then all these people talk about, "Oh, I thought Rey was a Skywalker, and now he just pissed on all my stuff." Like, everyone's getting so angry, but mostly the Snoke. You know, he just killed Snoke and doesn't even tell you who Snoke is. And it made people so angry, some people. And there was a big, like, memes going online saying, you know, "Your Snoke theory sucks." Like, right after Last Jedi, if you lived on the internet, this is what was dominating the internet, was people complaining about Snoke.
Yeah.
So then Rian Johnson had, you know, everyone had Night King theories. Everyone had Night King theories. You had Night King theories. I had Night King theories. Basically, the simplest answer was the answer, it looks like. So Rian Johnson just says, "God damn it, I had this whole amazing Night King theory." He's trolling Star Wars. Like, he's trolling what happened to him. So I thought that was really funny. Because you look online, some people don't get it, but then some people do get it. And like, oh, and everyone's like, "Oh, well done, Ryan. We see what you're doing." So I thought that was a great tweet. Tweet of the day. If you're a Star Wars geek that lives on the internet. If you're not, you wouldn't get it. Oh, yeah, okay. That's made for people living on the internet. So I love that. So yeah, just recapping, my top three moments of the episode were Sansa and Tyrion, or things.
Yep.
Number two was Arya in the library. And number one was Theon. I like a lot of things in this episode. I had nitpicks, and I spent more time nitpicking than positive, but overall, I like this episode. And we have to see how the rest of the season plays out.
We do. We do. But I think there's got to be a surprise in store, please.
Oh, hopefully. Do you know what your top few parts of this episode? Because you never told me what your favourite moment was, at least. I think, but if you have more, say
the
it.
Opening 8 minutes.
Oh, I really build up. Enjoyed
the build up. I thought that was really good.
So that's your favourite moment of the episode? Not moment, but that was your favourite thing, you reckon?
It was one of my favourite moments. Yeah. I think Arya in the library might be my favourite moment.
Oh, it was great.
That was really good.
It's well directed.
Just the way it played out. Just the stealth that she'd learned. She's putting all of her training into action. And it's cool seeing that. And, you know, seeing the Hound scared for his life, finally.
And then he sees... Like, he sees moments and then he sees, like...
Of fear.
He sees, Arya. Arya, yeah, doing her thing. And she's not afraid.
She's not afraid. Why? Stop being a pussy.
That was great.
Basically.
I love Hound and Arya. I hope they have more moments together. Oh, ultimately, I love that Arya killed the Night. I really do. I want it to sound like a bitching fan. Yeah. I really...
But...
I want it to work as a narrative for eight seasons by the end. Like, I want to know that Jon came back for a reason that's more than just distracting the Night King.
Fulfills his destiny, but we got to think that the Hound was, you know,
he brought back for that too.
Either. So he was probably brought back for that moment as well.
But we never see it in the show.
Said that it's been told.
We never see it in the show. We never see the moment in the show, and in the book's the same. He's not even back in the
book. That he's been robbed by death so many times.
But the Hound probably died. He should have died. The Lord of Light is the reason he survived. So we kind of... He's got the Clegane ball, doesn't he?
He does.
That everyone knows
which
about.
Which I'm pretty sure we're going to get.
When Arya did it, I was happy. Like, I was like, oh, already? And I'm happy because her storyline, out of all the main characters, needed the most justification of why we followed her for a few years. Like, I didn't think it was going to be the Night King killing. I thought it was going to be more like taking someone's face and killing a major hurdle. But then I didn't want Cersei either because Cersei doesn't belong to her. And then I didn't think the Night King kind of belonged to her, maybe only because it seemed like it was more Jon's destiny. But they subverted it because you expect Jon to break through that dragon and get there, and he doesn't.
Yeah.
We just have to see how it all plans out. I hope I didn't come across as too nitpicky because ultimately I liked it. And once I live with it for a while, this will always be how the story plays out, and I'll be fine with it. And I'm sure when you rewatch... Arya, I bet you there's so many clues in the dialogue about Arya and this. So it's just great. I'm sure it's great. It's just, I feel like we need, I hope they don't, okay. They never acknowledge that Jon died. Arya did for episode one. He doesn't want what's his name to bring it up in season seven, Davos. He doesn't acknowledge that he came back, and he has to have come back for a reason, please. If Melisandre was still alive at the end of this episode, I'd be like, okay, let's see how it goes. But the fact that Melisandre thought my duty is done now, it's like, well, what about Jon?
Mm.
Like, what about Jon? He came back to life. How can she just walk out there and die? Unless she knows that Davos is going to kill her anyway. Maybe she thinks all the pieces are in place for Jon to do his final thing. I don't know. It just feels like Jon and Dany, because she's part of the problem, but Jon coming back to life by the Lord of Light, I don't think he served his purpose yet for that. It doesn't feel like it anyway.
No, there's got to be something in store for Jon.
But we shouldn't say it's got to be, because it might not be, and then we'll just be disappointed again. That's the thing. I don't know.
There has to be
acknowledgement by people that he came back to life for a reason. Now, if the Lord of Light just wants him to be on the throne at the end, okay. If he ends up on the throne at the end, you go, oh, well, that's why. But then why did Melisandre kill herself? Maybe that's the questioning moment. It's actually a beautiful shot when she walks out there and then takes the necklace off and dies. Loved it. But it's like, why did she kill herself? Because that just feels like a full stop to the Lord of Light stories. I don't know. But I guess we're going around in circles now.
We are.
Ultimately,
let's just wait and see what happens.
Ultimately, I really enjoyed the episode for the most part. I really did. It had some thrilling moments. It had some emotional moments. It had some disappointing aspects. Only disappointing because I don't know how the whole story plays out yet. That's the ultimate thing. We don't know how the story plays out yet. But ultimately, this was an incredible achievement for television. Like, it really was. So I'm sorry I've nitpicked so much. I do agree it's not my favorite episode of the whole season. The first episode of the season is probably my favorite just because of the escalating tension, and I love the whole Danny-John thing. You know, like, what's going on there. But I ultimately really like the episode. I think it's pretty spectacular. It's a bit too dark in parts, but I understand why they're doing it because of the going, looking into the abyss, and it's a TV show, for God's sakes.
Yeah. And we'll wait for it to come out on Blu-ray.
Like, I just want to keep on stressing. This was good. This was quality entertainment still. It was just, it wasn't a knock. It wasn't like a complete home run.
Yep. It wasn't like Hard Home.
No. It definitely wasn't. But in retrospect, when we see all the pieces of the rest of the series put to place,
yeah,
we might like this more.
I think so.
I'm always going to like it more anyway because I massage things. Like, it was quality television overall. I mean, not just quality television. It was astronomically good quality television. That moment where John is running around and the camera's following him inside of Winterfell and, like, the dead are, like, falling through the roof and through the doors is unbelievable. Like, the set, it reminded me of Hard Home again. The Hard Home at its best, because Sobotchnik directed that. The sense of you being in the middle of this whirlwind of chaos was just thrilling. So, like, I'm nitpicking all this stuff, and it's so thrilling.
Because he did in Hard Home. He did it in Battle of the Bastards.
He's a good director. He's a good director. Incredibly skilled director. It's just like, and the problems that I'm having with the overall arc is not his fault. It's the plotting of the D&D that, is that really? But we don't know the answers. So I don't want to be, I always felt like I was a bit too negative in parts. I don't want to be negative.
Yeah.
Some of the vision, like the dragon shots, the white shots when they're above the clouds, is just breathtaking. Like, arguably the best visuals I've ever had in the show. Mm. Like, it's breathtaking. So, I don't know how to star it. 3.9 out of 5? 4 out of 5. Because of the visuals and stuff, 4 out of 5. No, 4 out of 5. Theo made me cry. 4 out of 5. I'm happy with that.
Yeah. I think so.
I gave last week's 4 out of 5, and I gave the first episode 4.5, and that seems about right. I probably like this episode, even though I probably like this episode a bit more than last week, because it was spectacular.
I like last week's episode probably more. I like the first two episodes.
This had the Theon moment.
I like the politics.
Me too. Well, I was expecting for a moment. Were you expecting a moment where I think I wanted more shocks in the episode. I want a moment that made my jaw drop. Not like heroic, Jorah, you do that. Yeah, Lady Mormont, you do that. Yeah, Theon, you. I wanted that moment. Never say that again. But I wanted moments where truly, like, holy fuck, I did. Whoa!
Didn't see that one coming.
They did. I can't believe they just did that halfway through the episode. Like, are you kidding? This episode didn't have any of those moments. It didn't. And that's probably what's lacking. But it's still. It's still pretty spectacular.
Like, maybe the Night King actually taking Bran would have been
cool. Well, I always imagined that the show was going to be about the end of the world. I guess my theory's wrong already now. Because I've been saying for years that the show's about Song of Ice and Fire, the book's about Ice and Fire, and it's part of a poem about how will the world end in ice or fire. So I thought the world was going to end in ice. I thought the show was going to end with the world ending. But it looks like the show's going to end with someone on a throne.
Or it could end in fire. Cersei with the wild. Danny with fire.
I just feel like the smarter plot, and they might prove us wrong just because they're smart, they wrote the show, I'm dumb and I'm just talking about it. They might have an amazing plot that's just breathtaking. And they might, and they probably will. I'm sure I'll love the last three episodes. But I'm just saying, it just felt like the Night King should be there at the end.
Mm.
He should be part of the smorgasbord of, like, chaos at the end. You can still have the Cersei and Danny stuff.
Why in the trailer do we only get snippets of episode 1, 2, and 3?
Because I think they've got something planned.
So they've got to have something in store for 4, 5, and 6.
Yes. So I might regret all the nitpicking I just did. But like I said, I think I've done fair nitpicking. I've nitpicked. I've had questions. But ultimately, I love it. I love it.
I love the show. And I've always said every single year in GOT, I trust that they'll get it right. So I'm going to just stick my trust in Game of Thrones and hope they're going to pull it off.
It's not like this is a terrible episode.
No.
It's really good. It's just like, oh, is that where you're going? So I guess that is a shock. But I don't know if that's a shock I meant. I meant shock like, in, you know, like devastating shock because fuck, he won. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. We don't even know. It's like, so we don't know. We'll be back next week with a review of Season 8, Episode 4. I have no idea what it's called. So, Tate, where can people find you?
As of next week, you'll find me in England.
Oh, yeah. Very good. Tate won't be on the last few episodes.
No, I won't.
But we probably won't. He won't be on Episode 4, 5, or 6. But he comes back like 12 days after the show finishes. We might do an overall Series 8 review, an overall series review, like a month after the show's finished.
Maybe
even. Just so you can come.
Maybe even an overall show review.
Yeah, well, that'll be part of it. When you talk about the final season, you're going to talk about the whole overall show. I'm sure it's going to be like 5 hours long. So it'll probably be up like a month after the show's finished because we've got to wait for Tate to get back. We'll probably all rewatch it again.
Yeah.
And it's good to have time to digest so we can really talk about the overall picture.
Absolutely.
So anyway, yeah, Tate's going to England, but you can find him also at...
The SA Wine Guy. Follow me on Instagram. There'll probably be pictures of me drinking wine, booze and stuff around the UK, Ireland and Germany. So get on board.
Cool, and you can find me and this podcast at www.moviemingler.com or on Facebook, just type in Movie Mingler, or on Twitter at Movie Mingler. We're also on iTunes, just go to the iTunes website, type in Movie Mingler, you find us there, you can rate and subscribe, or you go to moviemingler.com. You click on one of the podcast posts, and if you scroll to the bottom, there's a link that takes you straight to iTunes, a link that takes you straight to Facebook, and there's a link that takes you straight to Twitter, or you can scroll up, triangle button, press play, hear our voices there, it's great. Or underneath, download podcast, right click, save as on your mobile, hold down, save as, MP3 on yours forever to listen to. And you can also email me before I forget at nickdescalzi@gmail.com, which is nickdescalzi@gmail.com for all your Game of Thrones, Movie Mingler, and wine needs. Although if it's wine, I'll refer you to Tate. So that's it. So I say thanks, Tate, for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me here.
Season 8, Episode 3, The Long Night.
The Long Night. I'm going to take a long break.
Cool, and we'll be back next week with A Cast of Ice and Fire for Season 8, Episode 4. Ciao.
See ya.